Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies, or as I call it, the Talking Pictures Podcast. Yes, for those who want to know, I'm still working very hard.
The Denial Podcast.
I'm working very hard at getting it on the air. I will keep you posted. Keep you posted. Joining me today, I'm Neil Rosen, as usual, Bill Brigoli.
Hi there. Who's this other guy?
Oh, I'm getting to him. Bill McCuddy's here, as usual.
Yes.
And our special guest today,
drumroll,
Mr. Robert Wohl.
Well, thank you. Now, Neil, I have to say something.
He brought his own bagel.
I want you to know that I want to know that Talking Pictures on TV is no longer, you know, going to be on.
Well, maybe it will.
Well, on New York One. But I just so you just keep your hopes up. Back in 2002, HBO canceled Arliss, and right now they're deciding now to put on the re-put it on their network.
HBO Go?
Yeah, HBO Go. So just so you know now, so in what does that make? So in 2032,
right?
You know,
we have that to look forward to.
There you go.
That's awesome. That's inspiration.
The creator.
You got to come in with a positive.
No, you're right.
I always look at the bong as half full.
You're right.
Robert Wohl, the creator and star of the great HBO series Arliss, also assumed the position. Something I am a very big fan of. Those specials that I would say. I don't want to, debunking the myth, it's kind of like, would that be an appropriate way?
Storytelling.
Making history more palatable.
Okay, and
just getting into moments.
And a great stand-up career, including one of my favorite comedy bits of all time, making Born to Run, the movement to make Born to Run the
And he was the host of the Oscars in The Bodyguard, which my daughter and I watched the other day. And that was
you were
great.
In Hollywood Nights, too.
That was
you?
Great.
That's my first
he is Hollywood
well,
Nights.
There you go.
In fact, I saw Michelle Pfeiffer at the party that we were at.
Robert and I were at the premiere of the...
You were there, too, weren't you? At the
No.
Madoff.
No.
Okay.
No. Nobody knows the name of the movie. That's just what
Prince
we call
of Lies,
it.
Lies, I think. Okay. Like that. Wizard of Lies.
Wizard of Lies.
There you go. Anyway, so here's what we're going to be talking about today. I want to start off by talking about something. Robert and I were together yesterday. We caught
no one likes a bragger.
And he brought to my attention this article that was in the New York Times on Sunday. In the they had a section on their two critics, Manola Dargis and
Manny.
We'll say A.O. Scott, although Tony Scott, to those who know him.
Manny and Tony.
Tony Scott, who actually did Talking Pictures once. And it's
a good guy.
And they picked their 25 favorite movies.
Favorite or to say best?
Best.
There's a difference.
Right, there is a difference. There's a big difference of the 21st century.
So everything since 2000.
Right.
And I gotta tell you, I sound like Bob Hope, but I gotta tell you,
it's controversial to say the least.
I couldn't disagree more with this list. What are your thoughts on this list, Robert? Before we get into the specifics of these movies,
first of all, I don't know 2/3 of them. To be honest,
2/3. I don't know, like 3/4 of them. And I'm a movie critic.
I didn't know most of the movies. My biggest beef, as always, in all these things, I know Billy's going to back me up on this, is isn't it amazing there's one comedy on the whole damn list?
Yeah.
And it's number 25.
And number 25, and I'm not sure, I'd have to think about a couple of others if...
Come on, how do you miss Sideways?
Yeah, and this list...
Sideways is
this,
a great
this,
movie.
This list feels like it should have had Sideways on it, because
well,
it goes
Sideways,
into some weird
Sideways,
down corners.
What year
and down,
was Sideways? Was it in 99?
2001, I think.
Okay.
I think so.
When did the Red Sox win the...
2003.
Yeah, that's when it was, because I was talking to Paul Giamatti and during the junket, and we were saying that the
Pinot
Red Sox
Noir.
Were done.
Pinot Noir.
Anyway,
2004.
Who are you? Were you introduced?
Pinot Noir.
Were you introduced on the show?
Bill Brigoli is our technician.
I did that junket, and I spoke to Giamatti, and he told me that he knows nothing about wine. Nothing. Zero.
Pinot Noir.
Right. He goes,
Pinot Noir.
He goes, he couldn't give him some crappy house wine or some like really, $300 bottle of wine. He couldn't tell you.
I gave him a line at the Oscars that year that he went around telling everybody that he had Pinot Envy.
Good joke.
Pinot Envy.
Pinot Envy.
Oh, well, I knew about the project
so
because Sandra.
I like
Oh, yeah. Sandra Oh.
Yeah. Right,
remember, Sandra Oh was
Sandra
in
was on Arliss.
Arliss.
Absolutely.
She just got cast in a big thing for BBC I saw yesterday.
So their number one movie on this list is There Will Be Blood, the P.T. Anderson movie. That's their they think that is the best movie that has been done in the last 17 years. I like the comedy choice, even though it's number 25, which is The 40-Year-Old Virgin. And
I like that movie a lot. I don't know if it's one of the 25 best movies made.
Why not?
If you, you know, you, can you, you pick up?
You know how hard it is to do comedy. Look, how many people? Well, a joke. Somebody else.
Robert brought his own bagel. It was BYOB today, and so our lavish green room spread has been ignored.
Sorry, I know the Heineken maneuver.
Yeah, you might need it.
Well, can you name a better? Can you name a?
Oh, I'm trying to. Since I saw this, I'm trying to think of something I enjoyed. Well, I enjoyed Funny People better than 40-Year-Old Virgin, but I think 40-Year-Old Virgin is a better. I would call it a populist choice, but there's nothing populist about this list. Spirited Away is number two.
Yeah, please.
That horrible dog movie, Lucy, and which was like
Million Dollar Baby is number three. The Clint Eastwood film.
I love that movie. I love that movie.
I'm with you on that.
Is it the third best movie? Movie of the would last you, 17
yeah, exactly.
years.
Is that the third best okay. movie of night of the in the
if
last?
Forget ranking all these movies. That's the problem. Let's put say, is it one of the top 25?
I would put it in my top 25.
Yeah, I could see that one. You know, my thing on first of all, There Will Be Blood wouldn't be on my top 125. I mean, this movie to me is the and this movie when I started to watch it, I thought, wow, this is going to be in my wheelhouse.
Uh-huh.
It's historical. It's got a background, big performance. I'm an oil man. You know, him doing John Huston.
Yes, he's doing John Huston. That's absolutely
and
true.
It's right in
the
my
him
wheelhouse.
Is Daniel Day-Lewis.
Then,
we should mention anyone who's forgotten.
And then, I'm sorry, I think this movie's The Emperor's New Clothes. I don't think this movie is.
Paul Dano, who I like in other movies.
Not this one.
Is.
What's with the bowling alley?
What's with the bowling alley?
What's with the ending?
That's where that movie falls.
What's with all his endings? What's with the frogs? What's with the bowling alley? Why is the frogs bowling?
We're joined briefly by Edward G. Robinson, who wants to know why the frogs were in Magnolia.
Right.
I hated Magnolia.
The frogs should be bowling and have Scientology. That's what
I hated Magnolia. Okay, Boogie Nights, if you want to look at the career of Paul Thomas Anderson, Boogie Nights is a real good film.
Yeah.
Did not like Magnolia. Thought it was really pretentious with those frogs.
I like Punch Drunk Love, but almost no one else does.
It's okay. I hated that Joaquin Phoenix movie that just came. That was horrible.
That Joaquin Phoenix movie. What was that called? He's a private
eye. It's kind of like out in LA.
Oh, yeah. Inherent Vices.
Inherent Vice. Yeah. Terrible Vice. Movie.
Ooh,
and the real bad one, the one that's like, you want to like, just like, I almost,
Master?
Is The Master with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Poor
that's
Philip
just
Seymour Hoffman.
Unwatchable. I mean, I had to sit through that whole thing. That was unwatchable. I think There Will Be Blood is an all right movie. I certainly would not say that is the best movie, according to the
I think it's admired for a lot of things, which is first and foremost Daniel Day-Lewis's performance. And then the second thing that they thought was absolutely breakthrough was that for the first 40 minutes, there's no conversation. There's no dialogue.
Yeah,
it's just
the,
him
down,
digging
down
in the
It's a
by
great
himself.
Wet dream. I mean, it this is one. It's got an auteur director. This
you got the kid who
this is exactly goes to the point.
He
of
hates
the,
his kid because the kid loses his.
This goes to the point of the disconnect between, and it's not the critic's job to worry about this, I agree, but the disconnect between the so-called elites and the rest of the country. It's like, yeah, you're the New York Times and There Will Be Blood. They're not going to put on, although they could have put Sideways, but they're not going to put The Touchables. You know, remember that movie, that French movie with what was it about? Or where's The Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
Well, that I like that movie.
I mean, that's a great movie. I mean, and I'm,
see, I would have put I would have put Brooklyn on the thing. I love Brooklyn.
No, you're
I
the think, one.
Yeah,
no,
well,
it's a good movie, but sorry,
I
top
love
25.
But,
so let me understand this list. This is they both sat down and agreed that There
know.
Will Be Blood was number one.
I don't know.
Or do they each get their own 25?
No,
because one of the things I would never do if I was one of the last writing critics on the planet, I would never agree that I could come up with anything that I agreed with my cohort on. I'd have my 25, he'd have his 25, and that's what would make it interesting.
They ranked them and they did some kind of formula. I don't know.
Look at some of these movies that I've never heard of. The Death of Mr. Lazarusku.
I love that.
Yeah,
and I'm so glad
you
it wasn't.
Don't know that movie.
I'm so glad
Tony
it wasn't
Scott
a musical.
Goes,
they took the songs out, and I think it really benefited.
Tony Scott goes, the title is a spoiler. Okay, great. So why bother seeing it? The title is a spoiler.
I mean, but there. I mean, I'm trying to think what movies. Over the last. I mean, where's The Social Network? I gotta tell you. How can you have a list of 25 movies and not have The Social Network?
Yeah, I'm a huge sucker for Aaron Sorkin's screenwriting. I think he's one
of the most
gifted screenwriters. I like The Newsroom.
I do too.
I love Steve Jobs. Well, nobody else likes Steve Jobs. I thought it was interesting.
I like his television series that got canceled called Studio 60. And I also
like Studio 60.
Robert's a sports maven. I thought Sports Night was good. You didn't like that because you're too close to the subject matter problem.
No, it's different. Here's the problem. Well, no, here's a
Felicity Huffman, Peter Krause.
For those of you wondering, Robert is almost done with his bagel at this
point.
That's
correct.
Not quite.
So he'll be speaking more eloquently
in a
few moments.
Sports Night, and this is just an opinion of why it didn't work, why it didn't succeed. This is not anything about the quality of the show itself. When you put sports in the title of it, and Arliss was on the same time as this. When you put sports in the title of a show, you are eliminating the female audience.
Even with Felicity Huffman in a very strong role in that.
But Felicity Huffman was not pre-Desperate Housewives. Felicity Huffman was not a name.
Yes, I know, but I just mean she
was
well-written.
For the most part, you are eliminating the female audience.
Yeah. I
who was that show for? The female audience.
Right.
Because it wasn't about sports.
Well, Robert, I will tell you, my wife is
Murphy Brown with sports.
Yes, exactly. So you're going in with a bad title that's killing you right off the top, which is unfortunate.
I guess.
Two things about Sports Night, the Aaron Sorkin series. One, my wife has no interest in sports whatsoever, and we watched the entire series, and she loved it. So I agree with you, it has nothing to do with sports. Plus, there's a great scene in one of the episodes, it opens up. Peter Krause, it's about, I forgot the other guy's name.
Josh Charles,
right.
I don't know.
There are two guys that anchor an ESPN sports show.
Right.
And Peter Krause is a guest on a Regis and Kathy Lee kind of show. And he goes, oh, that's a great tie. You know, the Kathy Lee type characters. And he goes, I just picked it out. I just grabbed it in the store. Thanks. I'm glad you liked it. And then he goes back to his studio to do his show. And this woman goes, do you know my name? And he goes, no. He goes, well, I've been outfitting you for the last, 3 years, and I want you to know that it took me about a week and a half to find this perfect tie, to match the suit that I also picked out for you. You can't even remember my name. And then you go on television, and you just, make light of the whole thing. And I thought, that's just great writing by Aaron Sorkin. I mean, somebody really does take
Sorkin's
the time to
great.
Do this.
He finds moments.
And
there's
Peter Krause's character, he was like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. Yeah, because people don't realize, And I love that.
I'll tell you something else about that show at that time. Because I watched it with my wife. Because I kind of, it's Sorkin. It's at the time, neither Krause or Charles were stars.
Right.
And my wife kept saying, I can't tell one guy from the other.
Oh.
She goes, which guy is this guy? Do you know? So that was also
annoying.
But not that it was not annoying. It was an obstacle, that.
Right.
I mean, there's
a barrier
two things
to
going
enjoying.
Against it.
Krause found fame in 6 Feet Under. And
which
Charles,
came later. And Charles
and
found.
And Charles did that.
Well, The Good Wife, he was on for a long time.
The Good Wife,
He started in.
Dead Poets, isn't he?
Dead Poets, right. Okay. Yeah, he was from Baltimore. That's how I knew him. He did stand up for me.
What? Getting back to our list here. I wish I had looked.
Here's a mainstream movie. Number 7 on this New York Times list. Inside Out, the Pixar film.
Good film.
Okay, it's a good film.
The 7th best film of the last 17 years. Okay, all right. I'll stop doing the numbers.
I wouldn't care as much as I can't stand sci-fi and fantasy. If it's a good movie, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say this is the best because, we've had the Citizen Kane argument. Yeah. I've had it with it forever about Citizen Kane's the best movie of all time.
But in this realm, then, is it better than Toy Story 3, Inside Out?
I don't know.
Was
no, but, I'm saying,
Story,
but that should be on the list, too.
Toy Story 3.
I have
3
no problem
in,
with
in,
that.
In the,
having both
yeah.
on the list. I'd rather have that than some pretentious
Toy Story 3
stuff
is a great great,
I'd have to look the year
movie.
Up, but I think it's after 2000.
Boyhood is on the list.
I like Zootopia.
I don't think it's a. I give it credit for the innovative aspect of filming a movie over a how many year period? 12-year period?
Yeah, but that was more of a stunt.
It's a good movie, though. Yeah, I'm glad I watched it at home. I'll tell you that. I saw it on a screener at home, which was a lot. If I had been in a theater, I would have been,
But here's some movies that most people never heard of. Hours, directed by Assayas.
I love his film. You like his film.
I loved it. And, I thought Summer Hours was a jammerish film.
Okay,
wasn't
so here's
it?
A movie another... Robert likes. It's on the list at number 10. Is The Hurt Locker.
I do like The Hurt Locker.
Which is the Catherine
Bigelow
film.
I think it's a good
film.
Movie.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a
And that's
film.
On the list. And then you got a whole bunch of movies. Okay, now here's a movie that, you know, like it or hate this, but there's no way this movie deserves to be number 11 on this list, which is Inside Llewyn Davis.
Ooh.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, you put the 11.
You know, but here's an example, though. They got to take a Coen Brothers film, right? But they're not going to take, you know, something that everybody likes.
Well, Fargo, what was Fargo? That was in the 90s?
That was in the
90s. Yeah.
Is Fargo?
Fargo's a great movie. I'd put Fargo on the list if it was in the century.
Yeah, but they got to take a Coen Brothers. But God, so I don't know. So rather than shut them out, they're going to take Inside Llewyn Davis? Out of all the
and then with all this other pretentious crap, there's Mad Max Fury Road at number 19.
Yeah, please.
Well, which
hate,
you hated.
I hate that
you
movie.
You hated that movie.
I didn't get through it.
I thought it was to be admired and enjoyed.
Okay. I could appreciate the movie on a visual level, but, you know, there's no exposition. It starts out for like the first 35 minutes. It's just a car chase. There's nobody to root for. It's just blowing up things. Visually, yes, it's stunning.
You wanted to know which octane they were driving
on. Yeah, right.
The only thing,
directed by, I can't even remember, Abderrahmane Sissoko. Okay, I don't even know what that is.
Wendy and Lucy was the dog one I couldn't think of, but that's dreadful, just dreadful. It's like watching paint dry. Moonlight at number 20 is the only current movie in the last like 5 years.
In Jackson Heights.
Let me go. I'm just going to go through year by year quickly. Just go through this.
Launch
Here's 2000. Font. Gladiator, Almost Famous, Memento.
That's Almost Famous. I
Almost
love.
Famous.
Almost
could be
Famous.
A candidate
okay.
for me.
I would
it's a
put
great
that in.
Movie. Yeah,
I
mean, it's a great movie.
A Castaway, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragons, Requiem for a Dream, Snatch.
Requiem for a Dream is one of my absolute
High
favorite
Fidelity.
Movies.
Here's
a movie of all time.
High Fidelity. I could bring it.
Listen, have you ever heard of White Material? Is on this list at number 15.
I've heard of it. I didn't see
now,
it.
Munich is on this list.
Can I?
Munich.
Is Munich is not a great movie.
Are you kidding me?
So Munich's better than you think.
Number 16 of all the movies.
Not telling you what you think, but I mean, I know people that didn't. I revisited Silver that a couple
Munich,
years ago.
Seriously?
But the same thing happened.
Yeah. Watch it a second time.
And the same thing happened a second time because I wanted to love this movie, right? About 2/3 of the way to the movie, it's like it loses focus. Like it has five different endings.
Right.
It ends five times. What about this movie? Would I put this now? Again, going back to comedies, where's Best in Show?
Yeah. In fact, anything by.
Sure, that's this millennium.
It's 2000.
Okay.
You know, where's Best in Show?
What's this movie? Look at it. It's number on 73 times directed by who? Hasayo Hussain said it influenced the movie Moonlight, which is also on this list. The movie that I would that is on this list that I love, and I agree. I'm trying to see what number it is. Didn't you tell me yesterday, Robert, that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Yes, it's number 24.
Yeah, that's a great movie. I think it's brilliant, and it deserves to be on this list.
I like that movie too, and in fact, I might put it on this list.
I would put it on the list. Wendy and Lucy. Now, I'm not there. Are you kidding me? Where all the different people play Bob Dylan.
I wasn't there either.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that. No question about it. And Silent Light by Carlos Regada. I mean, there's a lot of these movies that are just esoteric. Look, maybe they are good movies. I don't know. But some of the movies that I am familiar with, like Munich, there's no way that belongs on this particular list. I think so. Go ahead. You went through 2000.
If you had to throw Spielberg a bone,
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, I would say I would Catch Me If You Can.
Unquestionably, Catch Me If You Can.
If you had to throw Spielberg a bone, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Robert, that's the first time anyone's ever said that.
Robert talked about there's a difference between the best and favorite.
If you gotta throw Spielberg a bone,
he's gotta eat.
Guy's gotta eat. Would you put the pianist on something?
Yes,
that's
I
a good
would.
Movie.
Yes, I would. Yes, I would.
It's better than the movies on this list.
Well, it's more accessible than half the movies on this list. I'll say that.
Identity.
I think it's certainly worth mentioning for what it begat. Everything that that came after it because of it owes a lot to
Catch Me. Sure. Back to Catch Me If You Can for a second. That is my favorite Spielberg movie. I don't think it's the best Spielberg movie. Again, there's a difference between the best. I'd say the best movie. You know, that's a whole other comment. Maybe you'd say Schindler's List. But it's my personal favorite movie. Talking about the difference between favorites and best.
Elizabeth Banks at that Catch Me If You Can teller window when she laughs and says and smiles and says she'll go have a steak dinner with him is just about the sexiest thing that's happened on film in the last 20 years.
And you know who Amy Adams was in that movie?
Right. Here's a nice little film, right? Again, it doesn't be pretentious. About a Boy. It was a very good
movie. I love that movie.
You know, so there's an example of a movie that because it's a little comedy, it doesn't get the weight that some of this pretentious crap does.
Yeah, give me some more that are in the millennium.
It's like, that's 2002. 2001, by the way, was a truly terrible
This is a good exercise, having mostly talked through the list. Now go through the time period and go, where the hell is...
Okay, well, are we going to count Finding Nemo? It's a pretty good movie.
Is it better than?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'd go Monsters, Inc. I don't know what year it is. I'd go Monsters, Inc.
But it's in that. It's
that's,
in that
that's earlier.
It's, I don't know. I
no, it's not. Monsters, Inc. is like 2001
How about
or 2002.
Up? Wall-E.
They're all
I'm
good
not
movies.
An Up or a Wall-E guy.
Wall-E is a great movie. Now, Wall-E's a great movie.
I'm not going to put any Lord of the Rings stuff on
no.
it. I can't stand the stuff. But
no.
I understand. I could understand somebody saying, "What if you count it as a trilogy?" I can respect it. I'm not a fan. Mystic River? Pretty
oh, I like no, that movie a lot.
Pretty good movie.
I like that movie. But again, if you're going to put an Eastwood film on, I'd rather have Million Dollar Baby.
Yes,
so they
that.
Did.
With that, I would do that also.
If you're going to put a Pixar movie on, 2008, I'd put Wall-E on. I'd put Wall-E on.
I know. I got one that's going to cause a lot of shit. Here's a really good movie that I like that was over, a little, and talk about little movie. Where's Spotlight, by the way, on this list?
Overrated.
The Station,
yeah.
Agent.
Yeah,
Station
great.
Agent.
Oh, The Station Agent.
Yeah.
Bobby
Station
kind of
agent
an,
was a
Bobby
no,
and Peter
good
Dinklage.
Move. Peter Dinklage.
You know, that guy makes good films. You know, what was the one about the Win-Win? Did you see? Remember Win-Win about the wrestling
yeah.
teacher?
Yeah, the wrestling.
That's
yeah.
a good movie.
Yeah.
That was
that's Giamatti, right?
Yeah, that was Giamatti.
Here's a comedy. Old School.
you
see, now everybody's
like,
laughing.
I like Old School,
wouldn't,
but I wouldn't. It's not the.
Again?
Is it better than 40-Year-Old Virgin?
To me, it's better than 90% of the movies on that list.
I put The Documentary Man on Wire, 2008, on my list. That's
there
what
isn't a single,
I felt I
there isn't a single doc on this thing, right?
There is something very phony that rubs me about Man on Wire. How come this guy's got footage of everything in the world about him shooting the thing over and nothing about the walk? This there's something they either
never happened.
Stuff.
Never happened.
I think
no, they have people in the street.
Fake news.
Kubrick
fake
filmed
news.
It. Yeah. Kubrick
fake
filmed
news.
It, and they projected it up onto
very
that wire.
Phony about how come this guy's got footage of everything shooting the wires over. I think.
I think that isn't that because isn't that because
well then why don't recreate the walk? It's
yeah.
like what.
Oh, I see. Well, I thought maybe
well,
they stopped.
No,
they stopped shooting.
Said, how come?
Robert, the buildings didn't exist anymore by the when they did
listen,
the documentary.
Listen, if you can recreate him shooting it across the building and doing all that stuff there.
But Robert Zemeckis recreated the walk. In,
I know, but I'm saying I just
left the most interesting
Robert.
Part of the movie out, which is where he
what's
goes to have sex with
movie?
The girl right after the walk.
On
remember
the wire.
That?
On the wire.
No, not on the wire.
What's the name of that? What's the name?
On an IUD.
What is the name of that movie? The one that Robert Zemeckis, The Walk. I think it's called The Walk.
Yeah, it is The Walk.
Yeah. So. Yeah, well,
with
I think
Gordon, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's a little light, French. A little lightweight to be in it, and
you want a great documentary? I'll tell you a great documentary.
Please,
that's the Standing in the Shadows of Motown.
That's a good trailer. That is
very
good. Good.
And
so was the other one, but the background singers.
Yeah, the 20 Feet from Stardom.
Where's the O.J. documentary?
And the Wrecking Crew.
Okay.
And the,
yeah,
and
Wrecking
the,
Crew. I loved
all of
and
those.
The O.J. documentary. I mean, if you want to really go to it.
But they didn't pick docs.
No.
No.
Maybe
yes,
that's
they
another.
Did. They got a documentary on there.
They do?
They have a couple, one or two of them on there. They got Anchor, here's Anchorman. Here's Sideways, 2004.
That would be on my list.
Yeah.
Hotel Rwanda was a pretty good movie, too.
Well,
here's
all right.
Eternal Shot might.
Yeah, well, Eternal Sunshine might. Is that might. That that's the greatest. I just love it.
Now, here's one that's going to cause a little wrong. Where's Fahrenheit 911? The Michael Moore thing.
Yeah, there's no Michael. I mean, yeah, Fahrenheit 911.
That's a pretty... Or Columbine.
Or
Columbine's
Bowling
a,
for Columbine, which actually won an Oscar. Not there. I mean, let's circle back a little to the original point that Robert was making, though, is that this is the problem. This is why we're all dinosaurs. This is why film criticism is going away, because it's so splintered. It's so divided between what a couple of people think and what the rest of the world wants to go
well,
see.
Well put.
Well, you know, let me ask you this. We're referencing this stuff, and as I said, I wanted to bring this up today. It was what we were talking about yesterday, is how many people do you think, somebody under 30 or 25, like the biggest stars of the day from other generations.
Last night.
Like who would remember? Like, in other words, okay, Marilyn Monroe. You can go to, like, an 18-year-old today and say Marilyn Monroe. And mm-hmm. I'd say the odds are that they would know. They would have the image. They'd know the blonde.
They don't know anything about her.
Right, but they would.
I
they
saw
would,
a girl with Marilyn Monroe tattooed on her forearm.
Right. And I guarantee you ask her what movie she's in. They might. No, they won't. I had my goddaughter.
Groucho
my niece
Marx,
last night.
Forget it.
Oh, no, that's forget that. But I'm talking about. I was with my goddaughter last night, who's 22, 23 now, and she's pretty, she works for CORE, the real estate firm, and she's really into pop culture. I mean, she's can tell you anything about everything. And she did not know who Cary Grant was. She did not know who Jimmy Stewart was.
Did the
she
name did not, ring a bell?
She said, Cary Grant, isn't it? She goes, no, that's Hugh Grant. She said,
really? And how old is she?
23.
22.
Unbelievable.
And Jimmy Stewart, she had no idea who he was.
That's surprising, considering that they run It's a Wonderful Life.
I know, I brought that up
all the time.
It's like they do this
during the holidays.
And for a generation that's going to be so smart and everything else, they have this entitlement that if it happened before I was born, it doesn't count.
So let's talk about
some
of the biggest stars of the day in their day. I mean, superstars.
But I wonder about if you
Rudolph Valentino would any literally
come
the,
on.
But huge star would anybody
oh, you're
know?
Now.
Okay,
wait a minute, Rudolph Valentino. If I asked my generation,
yeah, we just sort of tangentially know
Charlie Chaplin.
Chaplin transfer. Chaplin's different because he's an icon.
You went to like a 20-year-old kid and you said, "Do you know Charlie Chaplin?"
They might say he's a silent.
So does your 23-year-old is she watching fewer old movies than we watched when we were growing
yes.
up? Is
yes.
that it? They're just
there's a difference
because there's so much more programming and everything is. Do you know there were 450 new television shows considered for the Emmys this year?
No,
last
geez.
Year. 450 because they're streaming. They're doing it
right.
So they're
watching
just,
them on phones.
There's just so much bandwidth in a 23-year-old's head, and they're just not watching It's a Wonderful Life.
How
or
difficult is it? For
it
you?
Happened
so James,
one night.
James
or,
would they know who James Cagney
no,
was?
Not,
no way.
Not at all.
Okay.
No
would
way.
They know who Humphrey Bogart is?
Nope.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Okay. Would they know who Betty
know.
Davis?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Maybe only if they watched Feud
that's
recently
what I said
on FX.
No, they're not watching that. Here's a question I have. First of all, how difficult is it for your kids to watch a black and white movie?
There's a little tune out for my. I have a 17-year-old. She just turned 17.
But you're a critic.
One of my daughter's 23.
You'd make them watch movies with
yeah,
you.
Robert, one of her all-time favorite movies, and I showed this to her when she was like maybe 12 or 13 years old.
Young Frankenstein.
Some Like It Hot.
Oh, Some Like It Hot.
She loves that movie. And got to know Marilyn Monroe and Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, but that's a fluke, and you're a film critic. That's not. It's the truth, though. You have to judge every generation by themselves. I mean, I got to tell you, the guys I went to school with.
So do you think they should colorize this stuff so it would be more palatable to a contemporary?
You can't expect them to know this. And I have to tell you, when I went to school, I was a film student. But if you weren't a film student, all the guys in my dorms were smart guys and good guys. They didn't know who Myrna Loy was. They didn't know who, you know, William
well,
Powell
Loy,
was. But I'm saying, if you put the comparable, William Powell to the 70s to 50 years ago, we're talking about Cary Grant, which is 50 years ago, it's the same comparable.
Okay, so would they know who Johnny, okay, we'll get away from movies for a second, would they know who Johnny Carson is?
No.
Johnny Carson's been off the air for 25
years. I'm surprised.
Years. Kevin Spacey, as we were talking about.
Oh, was he great? You know, I was upset he didn't break out the bobble.
Right. Hosts the Tony Awards last weekend and starts doing an imitation of Johnny Carson.
Yeah,
and what did
does.
You say, Bill? You said you were stunned that...
Oh, yeah. No, it's... Come on. It's ridiculous. Nobody in that audience had any idea. No one in the television audience. I mean, obviously, in the Tony audience...
Oh, yeah. They know who Johnny
Carson. He got one good line off about how long Bette Midler's speech was when he came out as the president from House of Cards. That was at the end of the night when they did the best...
And what was the other imitation? He did another imitation also that was like from yesterday.
I have to defend all these hosts for a second because I've worked on these shows.
Right.
You know,
Robert used to write the Oscars. You used to write
when
Billy Crystal.
Here's the
was,
problem, and I have to defend all of them. It's a difficult show to do, first of all. It's a really difficult show to do. And the key is always, as in the early years with Billy, we found success. We found success. Do your 8 minutes up front and then get the fuck out of the way.
Right.
Do not stop and do bits in the middle of the show. Here's the problems with any award show of any type. With every category that goes by, first of all, it's usually hot as hell in these places. Nobody's eaten for
kind of
like
this apartment.
Yeah, almost.
We're in,
almost.
If you're paying attention, it's we're back at Neil Rosen's.
Well, I could put the air on, but our
would it hurt the Bill, sound of this Bill show? all the listeners going to say, "Oh man,
you wanna pause
no,
it?
I
you
love
wanna
the
put...
show, but the, you know
no.
the air conditioning buzz turns me off." You know, both of them would say, "Oh man, I don't know some." So here's the deal: it's hot in there. They haven't eaten. They're sitting there for hours, and you got to remember with each category. 80% of the people in that category have just lost.
Right.
They don't want jokes.
Right.
They're pissed off. It's cost them a fortune to go to this thing between getting dressed, limos, your wife got a new gown.
Isn't the studio...
No, with rare except you're a star, they do it. The rest of them, no, you're paying for it. The
you mean like the guy's getting the lighting design?
They're not paying for it. And his wife wants to come in a gown and a limo. Yeah. Right. So the 80% of the audience, 80% of each category, you're losing this. They want to get out of there. You know, they don't give a shit anymore. They've lost and they want to go home. Or they want to eat. Or
like Eddie Murphy a couple of years ago. Just got up and walked out.
Exactly. So
for Dreamgirls, he just left.
Number two is they all make the mistake. And even, I have to say, Billy made it the last time he did it. It's not your show. It's not the Billy Crystal show. It's not the Kevin Spacey show. It's not the whoever it is show. It's the Academy Awards.
Jimmy Kimmel.
It's the Tonys.
Last year.
Do your stuff up front. You didn't see Angela Lansbury doing bits.
Did you stay to the end of the Tonys the other night? They were running long. The only good thing was Bette Midler, and they kept trying to play her off, and she said, Cut that crap off, which was amazing.
Well, here's the problem.
And then, wait a minute. Then the end of the show, when normally Kevin Spacey would run out and go, thanks, good night, we're way over time, he does a number. He and Patti LuPone come out and sing a song.
But here's the problem with your theory.
You know what it is, Kevin, you know, and Kevin, you didn't listen, there's no denying how good an actor Kevin Spacey is. You know, but he's always longed to be a song and dance man. You know, he used to be an impressionist at the comedy
store. Absolutely.
You know, so and he
is that how he started out? Is doing stand-up?
Yeah. Well, he's an actor.
Remember that movie he did, Beyond the Sea?
Yeah.
Well, he did Bobby Darin.
I got to tell you one of the funniest things about Beyond the Sea. I'm watching the movie one day and got it on the screener. And, you know, they shot it in Germany because they had, you know, it's where the money came from. Uh-huh. So they shot it in Germany. And there's a scene where, at the end, Bobby Darin was into his hippie phase, and he's singing, If I Was a Carpenter, or, you know, I'd sing a song of peace. And there's a girl who's a really cute girl, and she says, she goes, sing Split Splatch.
Split Splatch.
Watch the movie. I said, play that back. Play that back.
That's funny.
Sing Split Splatch. And I said, I watch it all the time. I go, that's my favorite moment of that movie.
That's
sing Split Splatch.
Great.
An otherwise not great film.
Problem with your putting everything up front, doing 8 minutes and getting out of the way is that might work for the 1,000 or 1,200 people that are sitting in the audience at the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. But you have a billion people watching this, and I think even though 80% of the audience sitting in the theater might want to get out of there, I think that, you know, the billion people watching,
but they don't
want
to hear
like to
bitch.
Be entertained for a three-hour
show. And they certainly didn't want to hear Matt Damon do a bit about on the Kimmel show, because the hell did that make any sense outside of
it? No, but that's the point. They don't want to see bitch. They want to get to the next award. Get to the next award. Get to the death montage. Get to this. So you got to live. We got to sit through these lousy songs. Get through that. Get to the clip packages. But they don't want to see bits of people coming in, and let's take pictures of the people who are coming off the bus. It's like that just stops the show cold.
Well, that was a bad bit.
It stops the show cold. Just keep it going. I used to give. I used to be in the wings, and Crystal would look at me, and I just put down like baseball signals. One finger, fastball. Fastball meaning just get to the next thing. Now, the Jack Palance thing happens. That opens up a can of worms, and that opened up something because Billy's quick. You know, and as is Kimmel. Kimmel's really fast.
Uh-huh.
But you know, don't do bits. You know,
but if you have a good running gag like that, you know,
well,
like Jack or...
And also something else, too. Like with Kimmel, and I love... In fact, Jimmy and I were emailing because I had a great joke for him that he did not use, that I'm using now myself, that is killing. I'm surprised he didn't use it.
Can you tell us the joke?
Yeah, I was talking about how, you know, people think... I go, spoiler alert, that the Academy tends to lean to the left. I go, I don't want to say how much, but in every gift bag this year, there are 2 Syrian refugees. You know? And I got to tell you, this is a big joke. And, and he didn't use because he was going another way, and I got that. So... Right. But the whole thing with the Oscars is, number one, you have Jimmy Kimmel hosting it, who I adore and I think is one of the brilliant, funny guys. But Jimmy Kimmel gets an audience maybe 2-3 million people, you know, a night. There's 50 million people watching who have no idea who this guy is. And when he's doing running gags with Matt Damon, who nobody has any idea which is going on there. Now, I get it for his fans, but you do it once. You know?
Here's the trend. It seems
He was better than most of them have.
Well,
been.
It seems to me that whatever network is airing an award show, they generally now will use the talent. Like, in other words, ABC has the Oscars.
Except that they were long overdue for
Colbert cropped up in the opening
Kimmel
number
the nod.
Of the Tony Awards, which was broadcast by CBS. Jimmy Fallon hosted
the
Emmys, which were on NBC. So, you know, it seems to me like if you're the network and you have the rights to a big award show, Then who's doing the Grammy? Yeah, isn't
he was overdue. We've talked
who's
about
doing
this
the
before.
Is it James Corden?
Gordon, or, yeah.
Yeah, and that's on CBS. So it seems to me that whatever network you're on, you're using your late night lineup. You know
Corden's
what I mean?
Good. Corden's really
so that's why I think Kimmel is hosting the Oscars.
Yeah, but he waited a long time for it. It's been on ABC a long time. He's been on ABC a long time. And as we said in earlier broadcasts, he kills it every year. He didn't come this year, but he kills it every year at the upfronts, where he basically turns it into a roast and makes fun of everybody.
Well, he didn't come this year because he has his young child family, had heart surgery. But have you ever seen one of his roasts?
The second year he did it.
Funny?
Yeah, very funny.
Oh, Jimmy's great. Jimmy's funny.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I'll tell you a personal story with Jimmy Kimmel. I was asked to host with Jimmy one time a special thing for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And it was at this guy's house in the Palisades. This incredible estate. So we're up there, and the entertainment was Stevie Wonder. And it came up, Stevie Wonder, and it was a wonderful evening outside. A lot of big hitters for money. The time he comes to introduce Stevie Wonder, he's not there. Everything's set up behind us and everything, and he's not there. And we're waiting, we're stalling, and Jimmy takes the mic and says, okay, is it time to start breaking out the blind jokes? You know? And he's hysterical. And then we find out that Stevie's been throwing up, he's got some kind of virus, and he's going to be about another hour. So we break for an hour, we come back. Wonder finally comes up, and takes the mic and goes, where are the comedians? I heard they're making jokes about us. And so he made us come up on stage with him. And he says, I heard you. He goes, so you're going to sit here and you're going to sing with me. And Jimmy, without breaking a sweat, goes, if we're going to make me sing, you're going to wish you were deaf too. Right? And I got to tell you, boy.
That's a good line.
Oh, Jimmy's fast and funny. I think so. We became friends that night. I got to play piano with Stevie Wonder.
Oh, wow.
Which was very cool. And what's amazing is he says, okay, start doing some songs. And I just, you know, I'm up there like this. My hands were shaking. And I forgot everything. It was one of those moments I wasn't ready for. And I'm pretty good. But it was like I couldn't remember anything what to play. So I just did some kind of progression, C, A minor, F, G. And I just broke into like 100 pounds of clay or Please Please Me or something. And that band picked up on it like this.
Wow.
And I'm playing it. And I got this great picture of me, Kimmel, and Jimmy. And we're singing together. And one of the great moments. But wow. Kimmel, boy, Kimmel's good. Kimmel's
you had a you had a... You had a piano in your act, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as I referenced in the beginning of this podcast, one of my favorite stand-up routines ever, which is Robert's routine, is there was a movement to make Born to Run, the Bruce Springsteen song, the state song of New Jersey.
That's correct.
And Robert sits at the piano and plays the song. But you see, you're very good at playing the piano.
I haven't played piano in years.
Where did you learn? Did you have lessons as a kid?
Oh, here's a surprise. We brought a piano in.
No, I used to play a lot. I started out trying to be a songwriter.
As a kid?
Sure. But what's interesting about that bit, though, what's really interesting about that particular bit is I did that bit first in 1982. Think about this. 1982 was a comic. And that's when the song went before the board to make it a state song.
Right.
Because Springsteen has stayed relevant, technically, I could still do that bit. In fact, Jon Stewart has done that bit. Introducing him.
Did he actually do your exact bit?
Pretty much.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
But he was introducing Springsteen, and no big deal. It's not that big.
Is that what you closed with when I would see you at Charm City Comedy Club? Dan Rosen and Bob Somerby ran?
Right. It's really hysterically
funny. So what's interesting
is you had a little Casio. You had like a piano.
Right,
like
exactly. But what's interesting is that's 35 years ago. Hmm. Because Springsteen has stayed relevant, I could still do that bit today.
Well, but also because it's relevant, it probably could have stood up as the New Jersey State song.
No, but how many pop culture thing? You know, the same year the same year that song, I did that bit, Men at Work at Who Can It Be Now?
Right.
So, who could
Or Gangnam Style?
You know what
I'm
saying?
Like,
or My Sharona. Right. Do you know, it's like, stop and think how 35 years you could still do the same bit because Springsteen has stayed relevant. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Speaking of
so we're happy for you.
You know what came out in the trade yesterday that Warner Brothers is going to reboot? From the 1980s? Cannonball Run.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, is everybody driving 55 across the United States?
You know what? I would say I may go on a limb, but I think it's too highbrow for today's audience. Do you know that?
You know that was real? Car and Driver did it. A guy named Brock Yates. Brock Yates was an editor there, and he started it. And the people that almost won it were, I think it was Yates in a which is a brilliant idea. You know, for those people who don't know, Cannonball Run is a coast-to-coast, no holes barred.
Dom DeLuise.
And the guys who won it, I think Yates was in an ambulance, which is kind of brilliant. They put a cadaver in an ambulance and put the lights on and started driving as fast as they could from coast to coast.
Would kids today, even though he's alive, would they know Burt Reynolds? He's not really doing it.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
Do you think they knew who Faye Dunaway was when she walked out on
Sammy
No.
Sammy Davis Jr.?
No.
They wouldn't know him.
They would
they
not.
They don't know anybody.
No.
They don't know. No.
All right. Let me just.
No, it's 25 years ago.
Okay, forget about the people. Classic. Okay, I asked. Yes, would they know who Judy Garland was?
Yes, because of The Wizard of Oz.
Probably.
What about classic movies? Would they know? Like, if you said to somebody under 25, are you familiar with the movie? Forget about the people. Casablanca. Would they know Casablanca?
Maybe from references.
Would they know Gone with the Wind?
Would they know The Godfather?
Would they?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, they might know The Godfather, but surely by name. I don't know if they'd know.
They'd know King Kong, but not the original. They'd know the Kong Skull Island.
But they wouldn't have seen the whole movie.
You know, I know. For the most part,
Singing in the Rain?
You're talking about.
Would they know Singing in the Rain?
No.
Really?
No.
Sorry, Lisa Rossman.
Unless you're a film student.
And It's a Wonderful Life? No?
It's a Wonderful Life plays every year. But I talked to my goddaughter last night. But my father watches it every year. My brother watches it every year. And she says, I didn't ever saw
it. She knew who Jimmy Stewart was. She just didn't know him by name. If you showed her that movie, she'd go, oh, yeah, that guy.
No.
Did you do a little Stewart to try and talk her?
No.
No,
I didn't.
Interesting.
By the way, again.
Would they, okay, let's go more contemporary.
I don't think
would
in my
Raiders
generation, if I said
Ark?
Robert Taylor, if we went to school and you said Robert Taylor, I don't think they'd know that.
Would they know Raiders of the Lost Ark?
They might know Indiana Jones because it's been on, but even that's old.
Man.
No, that's.
They know Harrison Ford because
so
it's
So Indiana Jones is. A 23-year-old.
All right. How about
old
Titanic?
Movie. That's an old
right?
movie for
it
that
is an
person.
Old movie.
How about Titanic? That's like almost
Titanic.
20 years old.
They know.
Titanic. They know.
Yeah. Titanic. They know.
Because it's Leo.
And they had the song.
It's Billy Zane.
And the song was huge. The song is still playing.
The song is still. And also, it's Billy one of those. That's the generation's Gone with the Wind. A movie I never liked. Do you like Gone with the Wind?
Yeah,
I like.
I
Gone
never
with the
dug
wind.
It. I couldn't
I like
stand
Gone
her.
With the Wind.
I couldn't stand it.
Really?
I never understood the appeal of this. It's like, wait a minute, let me get this.
And they went through 150 women to get to her.
No. I don't mean her. I don't mean her. I mean the character. Why do I care
you
about
don't
this
like
rich,
Scarlett O'Hara
spoiled bitch who is fucking around behind his back? And what cause? What is this great cause the South is fighting for? Slavery? This is the great cause, and I'm supposed to be sympathetic to this? Burn their entire place down! I could care. And it's long. When Clark Gable's not on the screen, I'm bored to death of this movie. And I find her. Reprehensible. There's a play I once auditioned.
Do you know that if you adjust
called
for
Moonlight and Magnolias, it was a play that was written, I guess, about 10 years ago. They had it at Lincoln Center. And I auditioned for this to play Ben
Heck. And anybody? Oh, really?
Ben Heck, because it's about the writing, and they bring Ben Heck in to do the rewrite because he's had like five writers, and Victor Fleming is like the third director on this thing, and it was about that whole thing, and Ben Heck goes into this whole speech about. Look at this woman,
right.
You know.
Why do
and
we
I
care?
Always felt the same way. Why do we care about right. this person and about this whole South cause and what she's doing and everything?
Land, it's the only thing that lasts.
How about that? The cause, the great cause.
It's about acreage.
You mentioned yesterday that you think that people under 25 would know I Love Lucy.
Yes.
Okay. Would they know a lot of these?
Yes,
crappy,
I think I Love Lucy because it's always been on.
How about these crappy sitcoms from the '60s like Gilligan's Island? That's
well, there are entire channels devoted
Brady
to
Bunch.
That. If they're switching around, they've seen it. They don't stop, maybe, but they've seen Come
Brady
Here, Little Buddy.
Bunch. Maybe they're more into like what's that stupid one with the Olsen twins?
Yes,
Full
without,
House.
Full
well,
House.
Anything,
yeah,
hey, listen,
Growing Pains.
Why is it any stupid in Family Affair when I grew up? I mean, it's the same thing.
Buffy, Jody,
yeah, Mr. French,
Mr. French,
Sebastian.
Imagine
Cabot.
Having Mr. French around today with these two little kids. I mean, that'd be really cool.
Well, then you had Mr. Belvedere, which was the
that's another one, right? Exactly.
And,
so I mean,
and the guy who played. Mr. Belvedere.
Clifton Webb.
That's the original.
The guy who played
that's
Mr.
The
Belvedere.
Who was strange, too.
He was in The Producers.
Yeah.
He played... Roger DeBris. He was Roger DeBris. He was the director, Roger DeBris. That's right. I was writing... I don't know who played Carmen Ghia, the assistant.
No, yeah.
But, yeah, poor Mel, that remake just didn't really do it for me.
Well, if you're wondering, by the way, why we're not talking about any of the new releases, it's because very few of them have been shown to us.
The new releases are down, All Eyes on Me, which is the Tupac Shakur movie.
Which they're not showing to anybody.
Why are they not showing that to anybody?
Supposedly it sucks.
Okay, Cars 3. I hated Cars 1 and 2. It's the one.
It's not for you, though. It's not for you.
Pixar is...
You walk everywhere. This is for people with cars.
Pixar...
You're a New Yorker.
Pixar used to be this...
The gold standard.
Every movie was just like blew you away, and it was not a sequel, and it was just like this event, and it was incredible, starting with the original Toy Story, you know, and then you'd have
Nemo.
You had Nemo, and you had Monsters, Inc., and you, like, again, I said Wall-E, and they were all like, oh, this is just remarkable. Yeah, these Cars things, which apparently John Lasseter, who runs, you know, I think Pixar, and they're still good, these, for the most part, these Pixar movies, but they're just not exceptional. What was the one with the it was a princess. She was like a Native American princess or something.
Mulan?
No, that's a Disney film. But when Lasseter got in charge,
Moulin Rouge.
When Lasseter was just in charge of Pixar, the movies were special. Then he got in charge of all Disney production, and I think that it's he can't.
Cars is the three is the only thing that could possibly beat Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman will probably
be
number one.
There's a movie, Naomi Watts movie coming out called The Book of Henry
that nobody has seen. Did you watch the trailer to that? It's absolutely dreadful, and even she's not going to the premiere supposedly.
Oh my goodness! And then there's a movie called Rough Night.
Rough Night is getting panned. The Hollywood Reporter today called it Cadaver.
And then there's 47 Meters Down, which is with the...
That's at 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's the cream of the crap this week.
People get stuck underwater.
It's a Shark Tank.
It's like that Blake Lively movie, except they're stuck underwater.
But this goes to a bigger question here.
And there's a Bruce Willis movie coming out that's supposed to be...
This goes to a bigger question, is that...
We don't deal with those here, Mr. Wall.
Yeah, well, here's the whole thing, is that movies... You have to. They don't make movies, especially the summer. But it's going past the summer now. It's year round. These movies cost so much. They don't make movies. Everything is geared in our society. This is not just movies now.
Right.
Everything is geared towards, quote, the demographic.
Right.
The demographic being basically 12 to 25, and everything.
Focus features should be called focus group features.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, but everything is geared toward that demographic.
Yeah.
That demographic will go 2-3 times to see it. And the amazing thing, and I mean everything in our society. It's like, and the amazing thing about that demographic is we are gearing everything, including decision making, going to that demographic.
Absolutely.
And that is a danger, and we can see the lack, and I see it in society. And the biggest thing about that demographic that is amazing is they have no money unless we give it to them. Yeah.
So how did that demographic...
You know, who 12 through 25 has got
first of
money?
All,
Lily, are you listening to this?
I
hope my daughter is listening to this right now, because I'm not going to give her any money.
But I'm saying, well, but everybody's... Well,
Robert Wall has said I should not give you money.
Part of the next show I'm doing is fuck the demographic.
That demographic become the...
Because that's where the money... Everybody's giving the money to the kids. That's why we're listening to these kids. Why are we listening to these kids? It's like, they're not grown-ups. They're not making decisions.
They're the most entitled generation that's ever walked the planet. And, you know, we're to blame because what somebody said...
I think you're to blame.
It is me. You know, you go to anything athletic and everybody gets a ribbon. 12th place gets a ribbon.
Fuck the demographic. You know what I'm saying? It's what is this all about?
Having done Talking Pictures for all those years, hopefully we bring it back. Yeah. No, at least we were seeing independent films that were not... targeting that specific demographic.
They were
lower budget films. Granted, they weren't like $100 million Hollywood
movies. You saw a horror movie. You had 4 horror movies a week. Who were they, Gary? Who were they geared towards?
Well, you know.
God bless you guys for sitting through that stuff.
No.
How do you feel since you don't have to sit through that crap every day?
Well, that is the...
There's other sides to the coin.
To anyone who says this is a great job, I always say most movies suck.
I always had my heart going out to you guys and Lisa, and every time I'd say, how can you sit through all this shit every week?
There was a lot of fast forward.
There was a James Franco movie every week.
No,
we had a James Franco movie, new James Franco movie every single week.
But
IMDb, you'll see he's got 50 movies in production. It's like ridiculous. It's just crazy.
But I mean, that's the whole problem, is everything is geared toward, right. Because that's, remember something else. All these studios now are owned by giant corporations. It's not like each studio is a little independent thing. They're all owned by giant corporations.
Not Weinstein.
Just like every news...
Weinstein's going broke.
Every news channel is owned.
Pretty much. So the thing is that a movie that costs 10 and makes 25, 30 ain't going to get you a seat at the big boys' table. with these people. That's not going to be good enough. You know, you'd rather go with a movie that's going to cost $200 and can make a half a billion.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean,
it is crazy.
And if you make a movie for $200 million, who are you gearing it towards? And by the way, it can't just be geared towards the American demographic. It's got to be good. So you got to be
broad enough. Chinese star.
You got to have a Chinese boy like that King Kong movie. What the hell is she doing in that movie? But you have to make a movie now that not only plays to the dumbest person in this country, 12 to 25.
So that's our president.
To the demographic of Zimbabwe, 12 to 25.
Right.
Which is why television is infinitely more interesting from a programming standpoint.
And doing so, and having the renaissance of it.
Than what's on these big blockbuster movie stuff. At least there are so many outlets. I mean, well, hopefully, then why won't somebody pick up Talking Pictures?
Okay,
but there's so many outlets with
coming off the ledge.
With streaming services and all these channels. And there's just great stuff on television.
Which brings us back to the point we started at, which, like a Neil Simon play, soon we'll be able to see Arliss on HBO Go. And that's the important thing.
It's going to be about a year. I got to take out all the music.
How do you feel about that, Robert?
You have to take out all the music.
Oh, yeah. Because when we did the show.
You got to take out all the foul language, the profanity.
No.
Your clearances were for just a year or
what?
We did it the music. He's got to take all the music out.
Oh, jeez. You got to take out the music.
Is it all mixed? Is it on its own?
There was no streaming back then.
Is it on its own channel? Does it come out clean?
We're going to have to strip it. It's a big work. It's a big job. All the stuff that we have to.
How can I ask you a question before we go? I want to know about that.
What are you worth?
No. Look it up.
Why were the rights to that music available when you did the episode's first run, and why can't you use them now if you're going to?
But they only bought them for a year or two.
No. That wasn't just it. It's a problem of streaming. There was no streaming back then. Nobody knew the internet back then.
Oh, I see. So the contracts all say
we were never cleared for any of that stuff.
They released Fast Times at Ridgemont High on DVD. They had the same problem. All that music was just
We have to strip it out and replace it or buy some of it. That's up to HBO. But
is that every episode or is that half of them?
It's what they say.
Are you overseeing that?
I'm going to be working on it. They're doing three trial episodes right now. It's taking forever.
Are you in those three?
I think it was about how many episodes they say.
How many episodes of Arliss did you do?
I think it's like 50 or 60.
How many made 80? And 50 to 60 are impacted by the music.
And also, here's the bigger problem.
How many episodes of Arliss are there?
80. And here's the bigger problem. I would break into song every now and then in episodes. I would say, I would do something. I just go, I feel pretty, so pretty. And it's like, now what do you do? It's on camera.
Oh, man.
So that's something you got to deal with.
So you got to cut that out.
You try to make a deal for it. You might even have to drop an episode or two, depending on what the costs are. So this is something this is all part of the equation. I figure, look, if I get 75-80% of the shows, at least it's on.
Let's end on
your work is
let's
on
a trivia you. Question, okay?
Oh.
So the song Happy Birthday. Happy Birthday.
Right.
Has just entered the public domain.
Right. Yeah. They don't have to pay for
many,
it. They
many
used to have
years,
to pay for it.
If you watch old television shows and movies, they're not singing Happy Birthday, which is totally unrealistic because when it's somebody's birthday and they come out with a cake, what I don't understand, and it's not a trivia question that I have an answer to, but maybe you can offer up a theory on this, and then we're going to go because we're running long like we always are. In The Godfather Part 2.
By the way, my flight was delayed 2 hours, so I'm okay.
In The Godfather Part 2, now I understand The Godfather Part 1, Coppola was an untested director, really, and, there was a lot of budget. But Godfather Part 2, they just gave him as much money as they wanted because Godfather 1 won the Academy Award, Brando won the Academy Award, Pacino was whatever you want to do. So in Godfather Part 2, at the end of the movie, there's a flashback scene where they're all sitting around the table. They bring James Caan back, and he's talking, and he starts, when he joined the army, and he starts hitting Michael in the head, what's the matter with you? And Fredo is just acting like an idiot, going, if you want to join the army, Michael, that's okay, But it's Pop's birthday. They originally wrote the scene. Brando backed out the last minute. Brando, that you actually find it somewhere. Brando speaks in his study with Michael, and he talks about joining the army. But they do it since they didn't have Brando. They're downstairs, and they go, surprise, it's his birthday. And they sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow. So why in the world would a movie that has unlimited budget
Did they shoot that scene when they made one or when they made two?
Two.
So they had the.
They would have had Brando if they shot it when they did. They didn't know there was going to be a two. I mean, one was an untested thing.
So they had
thing.
The money.
So why would they, like these stupid sitcoms where they go, it's your birthday, for he's a jolly good fellow, which nobody sings when it's your birthday.
I think not only did
why
you have to license that song,
golf?
But I think it was stupid expensive. I don't think it was a scale
There's
thing.
No,
I think it was a.
You're doing a sequel. When you're doing
I can
a
answer
sequel.
The question. I can answer
okay,
that question.
Okay, great. Because I've always wanted to know why.
Because the movie doesn't work without it.
The movie doesn't.
Obviously, if you would have had Happy Birthday, Godfather 2 does not work. That's
anyway,
the reason.
It's a question.
It's just not going to work.
It's a
we have to have that.
If I ever
I like that he still goes on not knowing the reason why.
If so, we still don't know.
I'm glad you didn't
if one of us ever interviews Coppola again, please ask the question.
It's money. I'm sure it's nothing but money.
It has to be.
Movie, when you win the Academy Award for Best Picture, and 2 years later you do a sequel to that movie.
It has to be the money. It has to be that's why it's never been in anything. There must be some. So
it's all money.
Such a pain in the ass
it's
thing about
money.
That song. That song must have been like every time it aired, you had to pay every. There must be some technical aspect about it.
The first time they tested it, I'm sure it happened. The first time they tested, they sang for "He's a Jolly Good Fellow." He said it works. Okay, next. That's really how it works. I mean, that's exactly how. That's
well,
exactly
you know the story, about. And you know the story about Robert Castellano, who played Clemenza. Was that the part that was Frankie Five Angels was written for Robert and his agent, and he regretted this until the day he died.
Written
his agent
for
said,
who?
Don't do, Robert the guy who played Clemenza in Godfather uh-huh. 1, Richard Castellano is the actor.
Right.
Coppola wrote with Mario Puzo wrote the whole part for Richard Castellano. His agent goes, no, hold out for more money, hold out for more, hold out for more. Finally, Coppola goes, listen, we're starting to shoot tomorrow. Is he in or is he out? He goes, no, hold out for more money. He goes, I'm out. Basically changed one line of this, the entire dialogue that whatever that actor who plays Frankie Five Angels, the guy's like, my God.
Yeah. Michael DiGasso.
So changed one line and said, you did a great job taking over the family after Clemenza died. That's it. And the rest of the script was just the...
No, it's true, because Bruno Kirby was, may rest in peace,
great
plays
guy.
Clemenza in Godfather 2. And he was working with Richard Castellano in something else before then. And he kept thinking, you better not fuck around with this too much here. You better not. And he said, that's he was strictly money. But then he had strictly money, too, in Godfather 3, which is the name which shall not say his name.
Hamilton.
Was George Hamilton with Duvall.
Well, Duvall, I spoke to about that, and he said that he wasn't looking for Pacino money. He understood that.
Still money.
But give me money that's, look, I was Tom Hagen. I mean, the money was very insulting what they offered him, and he said,
but he was never part of the family.
But I also heard something else though, is that from Bruno, there was a whole subplot that was cut out of Tom Hagen. When he's remember in Godfather 2?
Oh yeah, about his affair, right?
When he says you can go, and Michael says you can go, and you can take your mistress, and you can go to Vegas.
Right. What do you hurt me, Michael?
The subplot got cut out of the movie, and apparently Duvall was really
well. Apparently, the mistress.
Well, it's way more interesting having never seen it, just having Michael say, "We know about your mistress." Boom.
The mistress.
It depends how good
James
it was.
I'd like to see it.
I'd like to see it. I always wanted to see. How come in all these compilations where he had the extra scenes, I never see it?
Sonny Corleone.
That's a good point.
Sonny Corleone, played by James Caan. The mistress was Sonny's wife. That's who the mistress was.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are out of time. I want to thank the great Robert Wall.
Yeah, the great.
The great Robert Wall for look for Arliss.
Was
next
he
year
here
on HBO Go? And anything else you want to plug? Shistery happens, maybe.
That's a wise away. So, Shistery's going to be
okay.
By the time this,
All right.
Too bad. Watch The Bodyguard again.
All right.
Is it good?
It's great. And as he sent me in a note that said, you were the host in the Oscars. You go, yeah, and I didn't screw up the envelopes.
Bill McCuddy, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill Bregoli.
Sure.
What do we got next week? What's on tap next week, folks?
What is opening next week, Bill?
Transformers.
Lucky you.
Pinch me.
Lucky you, guys.
All right. Anyway, so for Robert Wall, Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, and me, Neil Rosen, listen to us next week. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. Lisa Rossman will be here soon. Hi, Lisa Rossman. And we'll sit around talking with you movies next week.